Today I'm joined by Dr. Jerome Corsi, a staff reporter for WorldNetDaily.com and author of several acclaimed books. He received a PhD in political science from Harvard University in 1972, and his latest best-selling book, The Late Great USA, is now available in bookstores and online. Dr. Corsi, thank you very much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
James, great honor to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Corsi, I know you've probably had to do this many times before, but I'm going to ask that we begin by defining the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Although, of course,
right.
I think my listeners are quite well informed about the SPP, I think it's still beneficial to think about how to introduce the SPP to people who haven't heard of it yet. So what would you say to introduce the Security and Prosperity Partnership to someone who's never heard of it before?
Well, I'd say that it's it answers a lot of questions. I begin always with saying we're 6 years into a Bush administration, and we have a war on terror, and we have not yet secured our borders with Mexico and Canada. You would have thought after 9/11, one of the very first things that the United States would have done would be secure the borders. And we know that there are terrorists who come across our border with Mexico, some who bribed Mexican consular officials in Beirut and got through coyotes who brought them in across the border with Mexico, set up shop in Dearborn, Michigan, and were sending money back to Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon. They're in federal prison. So it doesn't make any sense that our borders aren't secured if we have a war on terror going on, and it needs an explanation. I say that, you know, the reason for it, and where illegal immigration is just a symptom, but the real cause of what's going on is seen in the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. This was a declaration, not a law, not a treaty, but a declaration that came at the end of a summit meeting in Baylor University on March 23, 2005. The three leaders, George Bush, together with Vicente Fox, president of Mexico, and Paul Martin, who was then the prime minister of Canada, came out on stage, and they had the three flags and the mosaic of the three flags blended into one, and they mapped the continental map of the United States. And here we get a description that we are now in the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. It's declared. And the explanation is how good this is going to be for all of us. We're going to have the three continents working together for a continental security. The idea will protect the perimeter around the continent while we open progressively the borders between Mexico and Canada. It's an advancement from NAFTA. So now this is NAFTA Plus. It's the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. And then we find that on the U.S. website, spp.gov, and that's sampeterpaul.gov, government website maintained by the Department of Commerce, that there are some 20 working groups, and you can find this in the 2005 and 2006 reports of the leaders you see mentioned in the bars on the website over to the left. And these working groups, a working group is a term of trade that's used in the European Union. It's the a term for the bureaucrats, usually nameless, who meet in Luxembourg and Brussels and set all the rules and laws and regulations for the European Union. Well, these 20 working groups, we have a North American Transportation Working Group, a North American Environment Working Group, a North American Energy Working Group, North American Health Working Group, North American Food and Agriculture Working Group. And SPP.gov has a little myth versus facts section that says, oh, this is just a dialogue. It's just friendly discussion between three nations that are to produce our competitive, you know, make us more competitive in a world global economy and more secure in a world where there's terrorism. All very Orwellian sounding, all very, you know, Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, would have been proud of this language and the myths versus facts. The basic theme is don't worry. I think they had to put a little button there with Bobby McFerrin music. You press it, it plays in the background. Be happy, don't worry.
I think so. So you mentioned the European Union, and I think the parallels there are instructive. I think 50 years ago, no one imagined that the Treaty of Rome was going to become a European Union the way it is now. So what would you say to skeptics that the SPP is not really a move towards North American Union?
Well, I show them the documents, and everything I've been writing in WorldNet Daily, where I'm a staff writer. I've also published articles on human events, humanevents.com, and the book now, The Late Great USA. It's a 235-page book. I made it, the argument all in one place. It's easy to read, but there's still 30 pages of footnotes where you can go see the government websites and the documents yourself. I want people to be able to go read this with their own eyes, because I think then, you know, I talk about the NAFTA superhighway, but when you go to the Texas Department of Transportation website and you see the plans on their website, including the artist drawing, I put it on page 93 of the book, you see the artist drawing of what this 4-football-field-wide highway is going to look like. It's staggering, and it's hard to, you know, say, well, it's not happening, because here's the documents in which it is happening. Page 81 of the book, I got a Freedom of Information Act request, and I've probably gotten now 2,000 pages of documents from our government on the Security and Prosperity Partnership. I've got the organizational chart, all the little boxes of the working groups in the three countries report to three cabinet members in each country. In the U.S., they report to the Secretary Rice, Secretary of State, Michael Chertoff at Homeland Security, and Secretary Carlos Gutierrez at Commerce. Then the little boxes report up into the White House, where they go to the National Security Council, the Homeland Security Council, and the boxes end up in the Office of the President. Well, that, you know, that's a formal organizational chart, which is not a dialogue. You don't do an organizational chart of a dialogue. I've got hundreds of emails with these bureaucrats emailing each other, meeting. I've got printed reports of the 2005-2006 reports to the leaders on my desk that are in, you know, 4-color productions in 3 languages, in Spanish, French, and English. They describe some 250 agreements or memorandums of understanding that have been signed by the working group bureaucrats, but largely never published anywhere, not even on the Internet. And I say this is a structure of a shadow government. You know, these working groups do exist. They're producing documents and agreements and understandings. They're permanent, it appears to be, working groups. I don't see any intention they're ever going to go away, but yet they don't show up on the organizational chart of the U.S. government. Freedom of Information Act request, I can get the organizational chart of it, but I can't find it anywhere, even though it exists and U.S. bureaucrats participate. You know, it doesn't show up anywhere except in the secret organizational chart I get sent on the Freedom of Information Act request.
Well, I guess I guess the other...
Not even published on the SPP website.
Yeah. Well, I guess the other tactic that a skeptic could take is to say that if the SPP was actually doing something sinister or something major, we would hear about it. What are some of the initiatives that are being planned by the bureaucrats through the SPP?
Well, let's just take the Trusted Trader and Trusted Traveler. The Trusted Trader is behind the opening up the United States borders to this Mexican trucking experiment, which turns out to be now a demonstration project, not a pilot project. 100 Mexican trucking companies are going to have access with their long-haul rigs to roads all through the United States. SPP has created fast lanes, FAST lanes, with Sentry, S-E-N-T-R-I electronics at the border. And as trusted traders, well, the Mexican trucking companies register. The drivers get their commercial driver's licenses into RFID, trusted trader, you know, biometric stickers and cards that they can put on their front windshields. They have an e-manifest where they pre-register what the cargo is supposed to be. And then they show up at the border and they get about a 15-second electronic check. It's like going through an easy pass on an interstate highway in the United States, all electronic. And it overlooks the fact that, you know, Mexico commercial driver's license base is not reliable. Mexico is a drug cartel controlled, corrupt country. Probably anybody can buy a commercial driver's license in Mexico if you've got enough money. Mexico's standards of their commercial drivers are still totally different than ours. You know, we're not going to be able, our Department of Transportation and SPP assures us that the Mexican trucks will run according to the same standards U.S. trucks run. But it is incredible. The Department of Transportation has created forms for the Mexican truckers to be, you know, drug tested. Well, those forms might be filled out, but there's never been any reliable drug testing done in Mexico of commercial drivers. Why should we believe it's going to happen now? And all of these issues, even in our Supreme Court, the United States has decided that we can't apply our environmental standards to Mexican trucks under NAFTA. We've already had our sovereignty lost there. The agenda of these Mexican trucks is the same agenda as SPP. It's the multilateral companies, you know, the multinational companies that just want cheaper drivers. They want to reduce the cost of transportation, including these Mexican trucks going down to Lazaro Cardenas and Manzanilla, the Mexican ports on the Pacific, and bringing the millions of containers that are being planned to be brought in there from China up this NAFTA superhighway, this new Trans-Texas corridor when it's built. And before it's built, they'll go right up I-35. So, you know, that's one of the kinds of plans that the SPP working groups are doing, and that's not insignificant. That's a fundamental... the United States to incorporate Mexican trucks and a system to do it. James, you there?
Yeah, sorry, I just lost the connection for a moment, but it seems to be back. Dr. Corsi, you had an article from July 30th, 2007, entitled House Votes for Plan to Free Ramos and Compion, which detailed some exciting news in the fight against the Security and Prosperity Partnership. And if I can, I'd just like to read a quote from that. The House of Representatives has attached two amendments to spending bills intended to free Border Patrol agents Ignacio Ramez and Jose Compion from prison and prohibit the Department of Transportation from spending any funds on the development of NAFTA superhighways. Several congressmen are discussing a third amendment designed to shut down the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America working groups in the Department of Commerce, but as yet no sponsor has been finalized. Can you speak to the significance of these amendments and update us as to their current status?
Yes, these are important amendments. Congressman Ted Poe put forward an amendment. It was co-sponsored by Duncan Hunter in California and Tom Tancredo, congressman in Colorado, and Tancredo and Hunter are both running for president in the Republican Party. The Poe amendment would prohibit the Department of Justice from spending any money to imprison Ramos and Compion. These are two Border Patrol agents who fired after a fleeing Mexican drug smuggler, and the Border Patrol agents are imprisoned for 11 and 12 years each. The drug smuggler got immunity by our federal prosecutor, Johnny Sutton. And while he had immunity, he brought another load of drugs in, and Johnny Sutton worked to seal that information from the jury and protect the drug smuggler. It's a major controversy in the United States right now. The Second Amendment, which was advanced by Duncan Hunter, would block the Department of Transportation from spending any money on SPP working groups that were building or aimed to build NAFTA superhighways. Both amendments overwhelmingly passed and are attached to the funding bills that went forward to the Senate. If they get the Senate includes those bills when it passes the transportation funding bill and the Department of Justice funding bill, we could have a real confrontation with the administration over these issues. And what you're seeing is a building congressional resistance in the United States to this North American integration agenda, because the Bush administration has advanced it in a stealth fashion. They lie about it. I also wrote an article in WorldNet Daily about Vice President Cheney saying there were no NAFTA superhighways. Well, it's gaming semantics. In the next sentence of that article, that letter that Cheney wrote to a constituent, he says, well, the Department of Transportation is going to work with the State Departments in the I-35 corridor. Well, the I-35 corridor is the highway that's been being designated and called the NAFTA superhighway, including by trade groups that support the I-35 corridor development. And so I guess the Vice President's saying as long as the states do it, he doesn't have a secret plan to create NAFTA superhighways. I mean, it's denying the obvious. What people are concerned about isn't the name, but it's the fact that the I-35 corridor is being reconfigured to be intermodal. That intermodal translates to mean take containers through docks from ships, like in Manzanillo and Cardenas, through trucks and trains, and transport them cheaply through the United States to warehouse locations in cities such as Kansas City, which calls itself an inland port. There's no water around Kansas City that would justify it being a port. The water's down in Lazaro Cardenas and Manzanilla. But Kansas City's planning to be an intermodal warehouse destination for these millions of containers coming in from China. And that's intended to be continued all the way up to Canada and into Canada. And Canada is about to get flooded with Chinese goods, too. Mm. And the transportation infrastructure reconfiguring into a continental configuration is a major occurrence. It's something that needs to be taken importantly, because the way the transportation is configured is the way people will interact, the way goods are transferred, and the way regulations and governmental structures will have to be created. We'll have to have a North American transportation, not only working group, but judicial system to deal with disputes along this highway. This is exactly the same route that Europe used to take what was originally common market agreements and end up with a European Union full of regulations and a governmental structure.
Well, then I guess the question for the average citizen becomes, how can we resist this security and prosperity partnership? And I say that because it involves such a broad range of issues, from transportation infrastructure to border security to commerce, each operating under a different bureaucracy, that it seems like there are so many fronts to fight on. It's like fighting a seven-headed hydra. How can an average citizen really combat the SPP? Is the legislative process, like the congressional resistance that you talked about, the only outlet for resistance to the SPP?
Well, I think there's several. I mean, we are also seeing in the state legislatures, the states, 14 states have passed resolutions saying no North American Union, get out of the SPP, disband it, and don't build NAFTA superhighways. I see an increasing focus on the Congress and among the activists who want to end the SPP is saying, let's make ending the SPP our next objective. It's focusing on several key issues in the United States. One is build a fence. You know, where's the fence has become the battle cry. And George Bush's explanation that now that appears to be that we need to keep moving towards continental integration, and that's why the fence hasn't been built. If he's ever going to get that explicit on it, and that's what people are suspecting, and certainly the argument I advance in my book, The Late Great USA, well, now people are saying, well, let's shut down SPP. Let's close these working groups. They're outside the Constitution of the United States. They've never been brought before Congress for direct oversight. There's no law justifying it. That Security and Prosperity Partnership itself is not a law or treaty. It's just a press conference at the end of a summit in Waco, Texas, March 23, 2005. So let's end them. And the avenues that are being taken is cut off funding or pass state laws encouraging our congressmen to end the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. And I think that's going to become a great issue as the summit is being held up in Ottawa, third summit of the Security and Prosperity Partnership in August 20th and 21st. I'm going to go on up there. I've got my travel arrangements. I'm going to apply tomorrow for credentials to attend the meeting. I intend to report on it extensively in WorldNet Daily, and I'm sure that's going to capture continental attention.
Excellent. I certainly hope so. So let's speak about the upcoming Leaders Summit in Montebello, Quebec. What can you tell listeners about the summit and the planned protests against the meetings?
Well, I've been interviewing Connie Fogel of the Canadian Action Party and the Council of Canadians. And it's clear this dispute arose with the Council of Canadians. They had rented this hall the day before the meeting was going to start, and they were going to hold a meeting. And the Royal Canadian Mounted Police came in and told them they couldn't do it, even the day before. And it appears there's going to be like a 25-kilometer no-protest perimeter set up all around Montebello, and there's going to be possibly as many as 10,000 protesters coming to the meeting. I mean, Council Canadiens is organizing across Canada. The groups that usually protest these global meetings are organizing, and I expect there to be very active protests at the meeting. President Bush coming up to Canada, meet with, you know, Felipe Calderon of Mexico and Stephen Harper. Well, there's growing resistance in Canada to President Bush because of the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan and the Canadian participation in the war in Afghanistan. I see a movement building in Canada to pull out of the war in Afghanistan. I think anti-war protesters alone will build the protest numbers just knowing that Bush is going to be in Ottawa.
Yes, it certainly will, and it's good to hear that Connie Fogel and the Council of Canadians and other such groups will be getting some coverage. Please tell the listeners about your new book, The Late Great USA, and the reaction to the book so far.
Well, the book has been hugely successful. I mean, it's just been out since the 4th of July, and in the month of July it's gone to the number 28 of the New York Times bestseller list. And it's pretty remarkable because we can't even keep the books in the stores. Most stores don't have any. We're rushed a second printing. Now we're into a rushed third printing. Even now, Amazon.com is saying they won't ship any until the 7th of August. So we became a bestseller with hardly any books anywhere. The Internet has been carrying the book, as has talk radio. I've spent as many as 10 hours a day on talk radio getting the word out. And when people are seeing it, it's become an Internet phenomenon. I'm finding reviews and discussions of the book all over the Internet. I wrote it to be easy to read. You know, 235 pages, can be read in two sittings by an average reader. And it's got 35 pages of footnotes, so you can really go get the documentation. And then I left all my articles up on WorldNet Daily and Human Events Online, so people want free access to the information. You know, the book puts it all in one place and makes it easy. The articles are still there, and the articles have live links to the documents I'm referring to. You can search my name, Corsi, C-O-R-S-I, on WorldNet Daily, or on Human Events, and you'll see lots of articles. Or Google Corsi plus North American Union, and it's coming up with as many as 500,000 entries. So there's plenty out there, and I'm finding that because of the documentation, you know, I've limited the arguments I've made to things that I could prove, and everything is backed up by government websites, trade site websites. I don't think anybody can argue that what I'm saying is documented and well, Freedom of Information Act requests. They might argue about the interpretation of what I'm pointing to, but everything I'm pointing to is fully validated and is out there, and that's opening people's eyes.
All right. Well, very exciting indeed, and exciting to hear that you'll be covering the Montebello, Quebec Leaders Summit. And we look forward to seeing that work in the future on WorldNet Daily. Dr. Corsi.
Thanks. I look forward to coming back to Canada. I've been to Canada many times, and I'm looking forward to a trip to Ottawa.
Well, I hope you'll be welcomed with open arms by the border agents. Dr. Corsi, thank you very much for joining us today.
James, it's a real honor to be on your report, and thank you very much.